Wow, thank you, Point of Light. Thank you. We have one more announcement that I'd like to just have out of the way right now. So if Kay, if you would help me out here, please.
Good morning again. My name is Kay, and I'm on the Compassionate Care Committee, and I want to make an announcement today. We were formed the Conscious Compassionate for Community Care, or CC4CC committee, was formed to provide loving kindness and compassion to those experiencing illness, facing transition, or grieving loss. And our team of compassionate companions are available, and you'll notice them by their pink name tag. And they're here to provide that support of loving peace for those who desire. And this afternoon in Papke Hall, after service, we will have a table set up for cookies. So please stop by for some cookies. And each one of our compassionate care team members made a batch of cookies for us to share. So please join us in Papke Hall after service. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Kay. Thank you very much. All right, so that announcement was going to be made by Reverend Clyde, who is snowed in or something in Tulsa. There was some weather, and he couldn't get home from a family trip to my old neck of the woods. He was in Fort Smith, Arkansas for a few days. So we know that he arrived safely, and he'll be back in our midst soon, and we just bless him with a safe journey. And meanwhile, I'm here to welcome you yet again. So good morning.
Good morning.
Shall we try it in a proper way this time? So welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living, and I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and it's been sort of fun. It's been a little lively this morning, and I think that a lot of what we saw out picture in the little faux pas that sometimes happen when we're trying to make something look a certain way is really what the message is about this morning. So when I chose the title for the talk today, I selected this idea of this story of the part of the Christmas story where there was no room at the inn. And when I thought about using that as a theme for a message today, what I was thinking is, what happens when things go a little bit less than the way we plan them? And this story is a sort of a good example of that. And so we have this beautiful way we've been sharing all year long. There's been a CSL theme. So our parent organization, Centers for Spiritual Living, has had a monthly theme, and many of us ministers who produce a Sunday service in such a way have been speaking about that theme. And this month, that theme has been the Living Spirit. And I think that's such a gorgeous part of the Christmas story. And so my aim today is to make the story come alive to you, but to do that not only from some facts and some archaeological discoveries that give us sort of new insights on how to understand what might have been going on at that time, but to also see the story part, the legend that's not necessarily all facts, but ways in which stories carry themselves to have different meaning as we use them to integrate our understanding of life itself. And so I think that Christmas time is a gorgeous time to pay attention to the stories, because there is no other time of year where we have more beautiful stories and lots of different interpretations. So on one hand, we know that we honor all faiths, and there are a lot of different faiths that are not Christian that don't carry a Christmas story in the way that is carried in the West. And then we have other celebrations like Hanukkah, We know that in Buddhism, there's an emphasis on the birth of the Buddha, which is another gorgeous and colorful story. And we know that we also have, right this coming week, the winter solstice. So there are lots of ways and lots of stories around these winter feasts, these great times to recognize the birth of light and holy newness in this season of what we refer to as Christmas from that Western perspective. Now, this philosophy is born on the teachings of Jesus, and so the Christmas story has significance for us. And I'm going to tell the story today of the what happened when there was no room at the inn, and I'm going to do it in much the way, because every week in this month of December, I have been looking at different little threads of stories. Like last week, for instance, we talked about St. Nicholas and the way we developed that custom of hanging stockings on the hearth. So today I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to tell it I'm going to report the facts around it and the current archaeological understanding of those facts, but I want to remind you that we're also looking for the story. And because in New Thought we teach metaphysical interpretation of Scripture, the story you're looking for that's going to benefit you the most today will probably not be anything I say, but if I do my job well, if I help you to see how to do that personal application, you will leave today knowing that you have a personal attachment to certain elements of that Christmas story because they give meaning to your life. And that's what story is all about. So what we know is that story is good for the soul. You know, we understand that there is a way, if we look, for instance, at the study of depth psychology, we see that story helps us to integrate our own personal experiences in life into the greater whole of all of life. So as we're moving through a challenge, like the batteries don't work in the microphone and you're already wired and taped and you're up here, then you look for another way to get through that situation, right? And we could be tempted to make up a story. So if it was something you didn't want to do, it would be really easy to jump and go, well, I didn't want to do that anyhow. It must be a sign from God that we don't have to do this today. But on the spiritual path, we're looking for something deeper. We're looking for a personal spiritual understanding of whatever we're doing that helps us then integrate whatever has happened, whatever seems to have gone a little sideways or even something good, but we integrate that into the bigger story of our life. So what that means is all of us, and some of us especially, but all of us are pretty good story weavers because we already believe the story of our life in the way that we have interpreted it, right? But it doesn't mean it's necessarily the whole story. We take it as we get it, and what I think is important is that we notice whether the stories we tell support our lives in a positive and expansive way, or does your story and the stories you tell about your life and your experiences, does that story limit you? And that would be where we could dive into looking at a spiritual meaning. Because when we look at spiritual understanding or spiritual meaning, see, it says in the Course in Miracles that we attach meaning to everything anyhow. So let's pay attention to how that's why we have differences and different views and why we have conflict in the world, because we're always interpreting things in a way that it makes sense to us. So if we're looking at a spiritual direction in understanding our story and applying meaning to it, I would say to you that the key is always going to be, from a spiritual perspective, the key must always be a perspective that gives you more freedom and not less. right? So it can't be limiting. So our experiences are going to feel limiting. Sometimes we go through stuff and it feels like, oh no, this is it. This is where I'm at. But that's just a fact. That's just a situation we're walking through. And the bigger meaning comes as we can get a little space from it and move, learn to move with it and through it. So when we do that well, we're always uncovering deeper and deeper meaning in our lives. Now, some examples of that, of the way that we're always telling stories is for instance, if you have ever been, well, and don't raise your hand because if we're going to be honest, everybody here should raise their hand on this one. But if you've ever been, had some pain from a relationship, if you've ever been in a relationship, not just a significant other, you know, we got parents and kids and neighbors and, you know, we got all that stuff. If you've ever had a difficult relationship, it would be easy to believe you need to protect yourself because love hurts sometimes. And when we do that, we make our world smaller. But from a spiritual perspective, with a little time, if we're gentle with ourselves and we don't try and rush it, and we allow it to expand in that light of a bigger truth, a larger truth that can stretch us, we can see that relationships unfold and that there's never, almost never, one person right and one person wrong. There's always just two different views or multiple different views. And that those lessons we can learn in relationship are the most precious lessons around love and around kindness, around compassion, and are teaching us to do better in how to do better in our relationships. We could also say the same thing about illness or disease or accidents that occur. If you've ever lost somebody, and all of us have lost people in our lives for those and other reasons, it would be easy to then become afraid of whatever that was. And so we begin to feel sort of victim to disease or victim to that tragic accident. And we can really, again, make our world so small as we try to protect ourselves that we begin to miss out on the beauty of living and of living fully. And I was also thinking of financial situations. If you've ever experienced a financial setback or something scary financially, it's easy to become miserly or to believe that you don't want to collect money or things anymore because things can be taken away from you. And the spiritual side of that, if you move through it, I mean, we acknowledge the sadness of loss. We acknowledge the difficulty of strained relationships, but we learn then to have forgiveness. And we learn, in terms of finances, we can learn about the law of circulation, that there has to be giving and receiving, and if we are miserly, we're not in that flow. We're not giving and we're not receiving. In fact, the root of the word miser is the same root that's in the word miserable. So we have to find that generosity and movement and circulation in our lives as well. So those are some illustrations to help you see that we will jump quickly to a story that is designed, but without even consciously being aware of it, to protect us. But we then want to make sure that we continue to grow from that story and get a higher perspective, a higher look on it. So the spiritual path can really help us do that, and that does become then an invitation for us to honor our stories. There are people like Joseph Campbell and Jean Houston, even Thomas More, I would say, who have really dedicated their entire lives to finding the meaning in myth, and we know that we don't have to be an expert in any of that. Because what they show us is that there are different archetypes, there are different personalities, there are different traditional things that happen to all of us, like the story of betrayal, for instance, and that we we get that in our life so that we can process it and that we can grow from there. And what we see is there's a universal theme in so many of those stories that we don't feel so isolated. And that then helps us to rise above feeling like a victim to it. And that's why we love books, and some of us love to go to the movies, and the theater is so wonderful in experience, or even the lyrics to a song. If you think of the songs that are most meaningful to you, notice what story it tells about your own relationship in life to all of those things. So, Christmas time, whether you are a Christian that celebrates a Christmassy Christmas, or a spiritual person, or you are pagan and you recognize the solstice, or you're deeply religious, it doesn't matter. All of those, as I mentioned earlier, are rich with story. And the story I want to tell you right now is the story that starts, it actually ends, but I've titled it, No Room at the Inn. And I normally, when I'm playing with the Bible, I like to play with Eugene Peterson, but he did not have my favorite take on this particular passage from the book of Luke. And so it's a short passage that we have created a massive story around, and I want to read it to you. And the way I collected, I like to tell you this so you can play like this too if you like the Bible. I went to BibleGateway.com, and I typed in the passage that I wanted to look at, and then dozens of interpretations of the story show up from different Bible translations, and I picked my favorite. I actually combined a couple. I'm a minister. I can do that, right? So I have the authority to do that. So here it goes. And it came to pass that a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the people in the countries under Roman rule must list their names in a register. And so they all went to their own hometowns to be registered, and Joseph left Nazareth, a town in Galilee, and he went to the town of Bethlehem, which is in Judea, known as the town of David, because Joseph was of the lineage of David. That's an important part of the story. He registered with his betrothed wife, Mary, who was with child. May I just point out, betrothed means they were promised to each other. They hadn't quite done the married part, however they did that then. So it was that while they were there, it became time for Mary to be delivered. Funny wording, but that'll work. And she gave birth to her firstborn son, and she wrapped him in swaddling cloth, and she laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. She laid him in a manger because there was no room in the inn. Now, we have told that story. We love, that's the nativity story, right? We have our very own gorgeous nativity scene that we set out every Christmas. It was donated to us a few years back. And we look at that, and we always tie the story into the fact that Jesus was born in a stable. But the Bible scholars and the archaeological scholars say that he probably was not born in an actual stable, and I'm going to tell you why. I think this is where it gets interesting. So I took that last line, and she swaddled him and laid him in a trough. Some say trough, some say manger, and because there was no room for them in the inn. But some of the other translations of the Bible, instead of saying an inn, they said things like this: at the lodging place, in the guest room, here's a good one, in the caverns shelter, I mean the caravan's shelter, I'm sorry, in the caravan's shelter. Now imagine a lot of people are traveling around, and so what they know is certain communities would create these large shelters where people that were traveling through the desert and through the, actually Judea was, Bethlehem was very hilly, but they had come up off the desert, many of them, and this shelter would be where they would all go, and they would just lay down their mats, and they would sleep together in like a large community area. But the one I like best is that instead of the inn, it says the village inn. I like the village inn because they give free pie on Wednesdays. That's where I would have stayed. if assuming it was Wednesday. And so I started to play with all of this. Now it starts to get, if you're me, it starts to get real interesting. And I used as a resource the Archaeological Study Bible. And in that fabulous book, they suggested that that line in Scripture that says, no room at the inn, was probably not a reference to an individual room. That it could also mean, it is more likely, in fact, that it means there was no room for them. And so we look then at this idea of not enough space. So we start thinking about it slightly different. It's just a possibility. We don't know any of this for sure, but these are some suggestions from Bible scholars. Now, it could have been a private residence because Joseph is going home. He's going back to his hometown, and he would have very likely had relatives, maybe even family, that still lived there that would have then taken Joseph and Mary into their home. The reference then that says that she gave birth and swaddled him and put the baby in a manger, would which we have now assumed is the stable, but it also could be a private residence, and I'm going to tell you why. The common home of that particular time in that particular region would not have had a stable in the yard. Only the most wealthy people had stables. And what they did instead was the homes, which were often built on the hilly sides of the mountain, when you entered the door to go inside the house, there was a level right even with the door, but the family lived on an elevated area above that. And down here at the level of the entrance was a trough for food and for water for their livestock, because they brought those animals into the house at night. And that was common. It was common to have that manger, that trough, inside the house, right by the door. So they did that because it protected their animals from prey, from wild prey. It protected their animals from being stolen. And interestingly, they also believed that in the very cold nights, it would help to keep the family warm because of the heat of the body heat of the animals. Isn't that fascinating? And so the family would then live opposite the door on an elevated level, and that would be where all the family activities unfolded. So it would not be uncommon for that area, if that was indeed where Mary gave birth, that manger would be right there in the house. Not to mention that women often swaddled their babies and used that manger or trough like a cradle or a hammock, that they would, the way they would do it in other cultures. It happened to be right there. It was a very handy way for the woman to set the baby in a safe place while she's busy doing her regular chores. So imagine this. Oh, and also it could have been there were designated birthing areas. So think about this. The women are removed from the men. The women do not give birth. I'm glad that we allow men to help us now. I liked very much having my husband with me for those experiences. But there were also, they call them caves or basements. So again, if you look at the hilly terrain, you might think of it like a split-level house, you know, where there's the front is here, but you go in the back and it looks like two stories or vice versa. And so there's this open basement area that would also be good for the animals, a place for the animals to be in the inclement weather. And the women were sometimes then taken away from the home because there was no room, no space for the busy activities of birthing and the midwife and all the other women that would come to assist the midwife. So there are lots of other possibilities that we don't commonly consider. So imagine it's like this. So let me go back now. Caesar Augustus has decreed that all the men, it says all the people, but the men, and they traveled with their women, all the men had to go register in their hometown so that they could be taxed by the Romans. So huge numbers of people are now traveling about to get to this place where they have to be for this official census. And Joseph's ancestral home is Bethlehem, so they're going to travel to Bethlehem. Now, they were in, from Nazareth to Bethlehem is only about 65 miles. So we go out, we get in our car, we get on any of these freeways, we travel for about an hour, and we're there. We've done 65 miles. But imagine in that time, 65 miles, they say, probably took 4 to 5 days for them to complete that trip. It was a difficult trip. It was very steep and hilly terrain. Of course, it wasn't paved. They had to travel through wooded areas with wild creatures. They had wild boars. You know, we call them javelina. I like to say that word, javelina. It wasn't in my plan, but javelinas are so interesting and fun to say. So they had wild boar, and they had probably mountain, they said lions in the Bible, maybe mountain lions and bear. And so there was high risk. It was a little scary to travel through that wooded area. And to make matters worse, there would be bandits, or some versions of the Bible refer to it as desert robbers. So it was not an easy trip. It could not have been an easy trip for a pregnant lady. It was not a vacation. It was not a pleasure trip. It was not even something they wanted to do. They were mandated to do this. They arrive in Bethlehem. Here's another part of the story we don't hear much. But she didn't just have a baby once she got there. Some time passed. Scripture indicates that some time passed. And finally, she announces that it's time for her to be delivered of this child. And she gives birth, and she wraps this baby, Jesus, in swaddling clothes, and she lays him in the manger. And because there was no room at the end, and that's where the story is done. So there are facts that would indicate, you know, why things could unfold in that way. But now it's up to us to add meaning to this story. So I want to show you how I did that. I wrote most of this talk on Wednesday, and so I had a lot of time to think about it before I finished it on yesterday, on Saturday. But I was thinking that some of the personal meaning that comes up and that I can really feel rings true in my own experience of life is that it seems to me that no matter what we're given, we really do have what it takes to move through that. And everybody in this room knows that to be true. Even if you're sitting on something scary right now, we know that to be true because we've done that already. And secondly, I was thinking that there's this beautiful way this story tells me, reminds me, that no matter how scary that wooded area is, that dark place with the wild things roaming around that I'm afraid of, there's something in me that knows instinctively how to travel through the dark woods. I might not get that on an intellectual level, but when I slow down and I take a breath, I do know how to move through those things. And then, because I'm an old midwife, I was thinking the third, probably most relevant part of that story for me is that when it's time for birth, nothing ain't gonna stop it. Right? And that is true of life. If we look at this in not a physical birth, but the way that the birth of any new thing can feel challenging, and the birth of any new thing is the birth of holy newness on this planet, that we can see there's this gorgeous insistence on the part of life that we simply cannot dodge. I believe this nation is moving through that kind of birth right now, and we can't dodge it, and the facts can scare us, and it can look like there's some scary, wild things out there that might get us, but something in us, something in you knows how to do this. We know how to walk through the weeks and months ahead. So let's go back to the Christmas story. How do you see value in any part of the Christmas story? Now, I'm not asking you, what do you like and what do you not like? What do you believe or not believe? I'm just saying it's story. And the storyline is universal in that theme. So what parts can we use in our own life? How do you relate to Christmas? Now, I got this far, so I'm sitting there yesterday thinking I'm done writing this talk, and suddenly I had this huge aha experience. You know, you've had that? All right, you saw some aha, but I had a huge one yesterday. And I looked at my own life, just in this whole Mary part, and I realized that I have had a major connection to Mary all my life. In the sixth grade, we did a play, and I got to be Mary. And I stuffed a pillow, they stuffed a pillow under my dress, and I had this robe around me, and I walked down the center aisle to the front of this, to get on the stage. You know, I didn't have any speaking roles. They told me, just walk like you're heavy with child. Well, what does a 10-year-old know about that? But I did a good job, and I have been relating to Mary all my life. But then, hang on, honey, this is where it gets good. I realized that I gave birth to my own Christmas baby. I did. My youngest daughter, Elena, I call her Lacey. My youngest daughter was born on the 26th of December because I labored on Christmas Day. But not only did I give birth to a Christmas baby, I was a long ways from home when I gave birth to her. I had to take a trip, and it was not a planned trip. It was not my choice. It was a mandatory, unexpected situation that came up. We had just moved to Northwest Arkansas. We lived in Bentonville. We had left LA, and I had to fly home 37 weeks pregnant. It was supposed to be an overnight trip. I was just going to sign the papers, get the check, get back on the plane, and get home. Hugh had just started a new job, and he couldn't go. And let me tell you, it was one heck of an adventure. So the first leg of the trip, I'm flying Frontier Airlines. And it was a great adventure. I was flying standby, and that little plane landed in three or four different cities before it got me to Dallas, where I could get on a big plane. And every time the plane landed, they told me I could be bumped and stuck there for as long as it took. But I had the faith, and I got on that plane, and I took that trek. It was fraught with inconvenience, disappointments. I was scared of lions and tigers and bears. It was risky, and eventually, I got off that plane, and it was evident I was not going to be returning home. Probably all that up and down landing had thrown me into labor 3 weeks early, and I gave birth to my own little child of God. And there was no bright star in the sky. No kings brought gifts, no wise men. I swaddled her in somebody else's baby blanket because I didn't have anything with me. And I placed her in what would be a manger for her. Her first bed was a dresser drawer so that she would be safe. No, I don't remember any hoopla. Nobody really came to praise us, although the Daily Tribune, the big paper there, came and did an interview with us because it was an interesting story that we now have an article about. They reported because Hugh coached me over the phone all night, and it was not a good situation for me. It is not what I wanted. It was not the desire. I didn't even think I could do that without the help of my husband at my side. But we, the entire family, because we had three children at home that he was trying to manage, we made the best of what we had in the way that we all do. Here it is, What are you going to do with it? Now, I want you to know that that is a true personal story from my life, but we're looking at the idea of birth from not a physical birthing story. I think it's sort of interesting that I would have one of those, but we're looking at it from a figurative way in which we can look at that way that I learned to appreciate holy newness in a whole other way than I ever expected. And because of this story, because of my aha moment with this story and my realization of that strong impending nature of life, that insistence, that all life brings newness, then I think that maybe we could even look at it in a more generalized way. What if all our disappointments, what if all of our challenges, what if all that change that brings newness, whether it's holy or sacred newness or unwanted newness, what if all of that is truly the birth of something that desires to be expressed in our lives so that we might have more information and rise to a higher perspective than we ever had before? So what do you do when there's no room at the inn? We do what we have to do. All of us do that. And spiritually speaking, I would say that what that means is that we practice non-resistance, that we practice riding the waves of life, that we find a way to get back in the flow, even though it doesn't seem to be the way we want it to go, and we figure out how to do the work that is in front of us, and then we just do it. But we get to choose the attitude with which we move through those things. I think this is the spiritual teaching of acceptance. Ralph Waldo Trine, who was a favorite author of our founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes, Ralph Waldo Trine had this great quote. He said, "Rowing against the tide is hard and uncertain. To go with the tide and thus take advantage of the workings of the great natural forces, this way is safe and easy." See, there's always this natural movement of life. If you watch something goes wrong in nature, nature knows how to repair itself from that. There's an absolute working way that nature restores order no matter what. I want to give you another quote from someone more contemporary. I found this quotation from Eckhart Tolle. And you know, Eckhart Tolle is all about being in the present moment. He wrote that his first big title, the well-read title, was The Power of Now. Eckhart Tolle says this, "As we learn to accept what is right in front of us, we can learn to work with things instead of against things. We can learn to look at the surprises in life as if they were here to help us grow." Oh, what a thought. Think of the last surprise you had in life. And how quickly can we get to that question, how has this come to help me grow? How has this come to help other people in my life grow? Because, you know, we're never alone. I do. I think it's about acceptance. And here's an interesting fact. Ernest Holmes, if you research everything he ever said about acceptance, he never talked about acceptance aside from the fact that our whole point in life is to become more open, more accepting of the presence and the power of God right where we are. You see, Ernest Holmes would never use the idea of acceptance connected to any form of resignation. I cannot imagine that Ernest Holmes would ever have said something goes wrong and Ernest would have gone, "Well, it is what it is." No. Acceptance is that way that we don't have to like it, but we recognize that there's something larger that will be revealed as we ride that wave, as we move through whatever that challenge is. It's quite the opposite of resignation. For Ernest Holmes, it was always about claiming a greater realization of life. Everything that comes to us so that we might claim a greater realization of life, a clearer acknowledgement of the presence of God in our lives, to embody these bigger truths. So let's look at our stories. Pay attention to your stories. Pay attention to the stories you tell other people, because it will reveal the story you are telling yourself. And I want to end this morning with this fabulous, kind of funny quotation I found from a new love of my life. I never heard of this character before, but his name is Jim Dodge. I think he's still living. Jim Dodge, interesting American poet and author. He has this very eclectic professional background. He's earned a master's in fine arts. He was the director of the English department at Humboldt University, but he also has on his resume that he is an apple picker, a carpet layer, and a professional gambler. I must know this person. Well, maybe I'm married to him now that I think about it. Love you. Okay, this is what Jim Dodge says. This is the perfect end for this message. He says, it just ain't possible to explain some things. It's interesting to wonder on them and to do some speculation. But the main thing is you have to accept life. You have to take it for what it is, and you have to get on with your growing. So let us get on with our growing. Let us use these beautiful stories that unfold this time of year to realize in a deeper and broader way that our stories have meaning too. And if we are willing to see our stories from a spiritual perspective, they will indeed change our lives. So let's anchor these words and these ideas in the sacred movement of words in prayer. So I invite you to just get comfortable where you are. Feel the way that chair so perfectly supports you. Let's move deep within to the secret place of the Most High. I feel the love of God within me, and I know it is that activity of life that is at the core of every person sitting in this room. Heart of every living being. I feel the love of God, and I know that it is that infinite presence and power, that it is greater than we are. It is the most powerful force in this universe, and it is a power for good. And I know that that presence is right here, right now, in this very room. Activated at the words of this prayer, so we are increasingly aware of a greater truth. I feel the love of God at the core of my own being, and I realize that it is that force that moves through all activity of life. And so as we stand 1 week away from the day in which much of the world celebrates the birth of the Christ consciousness on this planet, I see that we are surrounded with story that is rich with meaning, and that each of us, as we are invited to see and bring that meaning to ourselves in a very personal way, I see that it does something magnificent in the transformation of all things to light and to love. It causes us to remember that newborn innocence again. It allows us to tap into myth and to story and to see the value of the bright star in the sky, the baby born in humble surroundings, the journey of the parents, and to remember that each of us is a holy child of God. We use this season to be born again, to be born new in our innocence, to be expansive in our love, to carry the joy of the Christmas carols or the beauty of the sacredness of the story, and to allow it to bring meaning and purposefulness into our everyday living. And so as we have been brave and courageous this day to look at our own individual story, I simply know that any limitations that we think we have seen in by way of appearance or experience or a situation, that there is healing going on right now. A healing. There is physical healing as the body is restored to wholeness at the sound of these truthful words. There is healing in our finances. There is healing and blessing in our relationships. And we open ourselves to a deeper understanding of forgiveness and of that sacredness of acceptance. And so this day, this week before Christmas, we open ourselves to see that the only thing there really is to accept is the fullness of God in our lives, the presence of truth, the gift of light and of love. And I say thank you, God, for all of these things. Thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, infinite spirit. We are so blessed. And in that deep spirit of gratitude, I simply release these words of prayer into that divine law that can only say yes. We let it be, and together we say, and so it is. Point of light.